CBS, Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The cricketer Imran Khan is also the politician Imran Khan. And introducing us to Imran Khan's present authority is Sadnan Dumay of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes a column on the subcontinent for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Imran Khan was turned out of his premiership by the legislature. But now, Sadnan, a very good evening to you. It is impossible to summarize Imran Khan's extremely busy life, but he's chiefly known, as I understand it, throughout Pakistan and throughout the cricket-playing world as a man who led a team from behind an unlikely victory. That reputation is some decades out of date, but I learned from your column that it's still on the top of everybody's mind. Is he understood to be magical in some fashion? Does he have superpowers from the point of view of his supporters? Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Certainly from the point of view of his supporters. He's seen as this extremely charismatic figure who dominated. In some ways, he was at the pinnacle of world cricket for more than two decades. He led the Pakistani team to a famous come-from-behind victory in the World Cup in 1992. This remains that nation's greatest sporting achievement in its history. And then he went and founded a really excellent cancer hospital in memory of his late mother before joining politics. And for many years, he was considered a bit of a joke in politics. Like he was, you know, his party was dismissed as a one-man band. But he kept persevering and he came in second in the 2013 election by vote share and then took power in 2018. Before being turfed out of power by Parliament last year. But it's really, I mean, it's a stunning story, right? It's the stuff of epics, this man's life. And at least in the subcontinent and anywhere in the cricket-playing world, Imran Khan has been a very famous figure for about 50 years now.
His politics are his own version of what should be done for Pakistan. He's got charisma. He certainly has supporters in the large cities. And he's been bedeviling the Sharif government since he was turned out. He wants new elections. Is the thinking that if there are new elections, he'll be defeated or win? Is there any understanding of his authority as a comeback a politician?
Yeah, there is a sense that if there are new elections, and right now there are likely to be held, or they ought to be held according to the constitution by October. Before that, he's pushing for them to hold provincial elections in Punjab, which is the most important province, and also in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. And the government is kind of dragging its feet because if he wins the provincial elections in the run-up to the national elections, I think, you know, people will see his momentum as essentially unstoppable. But, you know, the reason that this is kind of different from democratic politics in many other countries is that there is another player in the room, which is extremely important, which is the Pakistani army. You know, if we were having this discussion about the election in Indonesia or the election in India or the election in most other places, we wouldn't be talking about the army. But in Pakistan, the army has always played an outsized role in the politics of and the governance of that country. And so the question now is whether Imran Khan, who is on a collision course with the Pakistani army and specifically with the army chief, Asim Munir, whether Imran Khan is going to be the first politician effectively in the history of Pakistan to bulldoze his way past the army chief, or whether the army chief has the wherewithal and the backing of enough of his generals to stop Imran Khan in his tracks. That's the heart of the drama.
Imran Khan claims, I'm following your reporting and other reporting, that the army was responsible for an attempted assassination last November. He doesn't offer any evidence of this. Does that claim, that conspiracy claim, does that resonate in Pakistan?
It certainly resonates with Imran Khan's followers. They believe it. It is a plausible claim, to be fair. I mean, I'm just pointing out that there was no evidence preferred. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's untrue. We just don't know. It is certainly true that other politicians in the past who have fallen out of favor with the army have a curious habit of either ending up dead or ending up in exile somewhere, usually either the Middle East or in London. You know, even after the assassination attempt in November, Imran Khan has not let up his momentum. He hasn't shut up. He has, in fact, taken the fight to the army chief. And what we're seeing, John, for the first time ever, is a country where people used to be very, very careful about how they talked about the army. And now on social media, on TikTok, on WhatsApp, on Twitter, on Facebook, you have Imran Khan supporters who are essentially trashing the Pakistan army and casting aspersions on the character of a serving army chief. Remarkable times.
So this comes to ad hominem in both directions. However, Pakistan has problems that are much larger than personalities. The flooding last year led to famine, the complete emptying of the treasury, the question of China and Pakistan, the question of India and Pakistan. Does Imran Khan, if he were to be premier again, does he have answers to any of those tragedies?
So here, you know, my view is that that is the tragedy of Imran Khan, that he is in many ways a charismatic, admirable figure who has shown great grit and tenacity and a certain amount of idealism. But he doesn't really have any answers for these important, you know, problems that plague Pakistan. His 4 years as prime minister were a failure. In fact, you know, it was his decisions that led to this sort of economic meltdown that we're seeing now. And, you know, he ended up, you know, just saying and doing some very unwise things. For example, going to Moscow on the day that Putin invaded Ukraine, for example, when the Taliban took over Kabul, that they had broken the shackles of slavery. And so he just sort of has done several things, both in terms of economic policy and in terms of foreign policy, that set back his country. So think of this guy as he's a charismatic guy, but he does not know how to wield power effectively. And so it's a real problem.
The stance that he has towards NATO, the stance that he has towards the U.S., and you report that some versions of what he said are anti-American. Does that make him a success in Pakistan to stand back from the U.S.?
It certainly helps. You know, if you put him in an international context, you know, I would say that there's a resemblance with someone like Mohamed Morsi in Egypt or Erdogan in Turkey. You know, these are broadly populist, either Islamists themselves or Islamist-friendly politicians who really make the most of latent anti-American sentiment in their societies. And that's Imran Khan. You know, he doesn't have the kind of the backing of an organization like the Muslim Brotherhood, which helped bring Morsi to power, or the AKP, which helped bring Erdogan to power. So in many ways, he's a much more of a self-made politician, though the army did help him take power in 2018. But in terms of his ideas, he sort of speaks to a similar kind of vague anti-Americanism mixed with leftism and pan-Islamism.
And the present campaign against the prime minister, does it matter that Sharif is at this point overwhelmed by all these problems? Does that make Khan's road easier or harder? The famine I'm thinking of chiefly, Sadanan. We have a few minutes, seconds.
Way easier, right? I mean, this almost sort of fell into Khan's lap. He was partly responsible, at least, for the economic situation that this government inherited. Right. But that said, this government has also done a poor job. But he is going into this election with people rioting over flour shortages, with inflation through the roof, with the treasury essentially bankrupt. And people are blaming the guy who's in office right now, and they're not blaming the guy who was in office until a year ago.
Sadanan Dume for the American Enterprise Institute, writing his column for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.